Welcome to Hard Mode. This startup caper is hard work. The startup founder reality is problem solving at its most extreme. A series of U-turns, struggles, setbacks, and adjustments on the path to creating tech-enabled businesses that customers and users love. Join us on this storytelling series with a roll call of technology company founders, investors, operators, and outliers as they share anecdotes of the journey towards sustainable growth. Hosted and curated by the team at Tractor Ventures. Welcome to
Hard Mode.
Hard Mode.
Hard Mode.
This episode of Hard Mode features Blackbird co-founder Nikki Shivak in conversation with Tractor Ventures co-founder Matt Allen. Blackbird's mission is to be a partner to the greatest business stories born from Australia and New Zealand. Prior to Blackbird Ventures, Nikki founded Startmate, an accelerator that helps nerds with ideas become great CEOs and build global startups. This conversation revolves around the history of starting Blackbird Ventures, the interactions with numerous founders shaping the trajectory of the Australian and New Zealand technology ecosystem, and hard moments witnessed in the creation of iconic companies and Blackbird itself. Thanks for joining.
All right, welcome to this episode of Hard Mode. And today, I, Matt Allen, have Nikki Shivak, co-founder of Blackbird with us. Welcome to our podcast, Nikki.
Thank you, Matt.
It's exciting to have you on here. And as I was talking to the team about, you know, why we built a podcast called Hard Mode, why the kinds of people we wanted to talk to and the kinds of things we wanted to talk about. Initially, obviously, the first thing we think about is founders and founders building things in hard mode. But I think something that people may not realize is when you're building a venture fund, especially for the first time, it's not dissimilar to building a startup. So I'd love you to take us back and talk about the beginnings of Blackbird. I think that story isn't as told as it's a long time ago now. It's nearly 10 years ago, or it's probably 10 years ago almost to the day, I imagine, when you started. But I'd love to know a little bit more around what's hard about building a venture fund.
Well, there's also what was hard about building a venture fund in 2012 and building it in 2012 in Australia, I would add. And so back then, Australian venture capital was a very dirty word. There had been sort of two waves of venture capital in Australia, and both waves had sort of failed miserably. There were a few successes within there, but on the whole, the two waves had wiped out. Paradoxically, on the other side, though, you had a set of really successful startups already, and they had succeeded despite no venture capital and no venture capital industry in Australia. This is Atlassian and Campaign Monitor and Half Brick Studios, Aconex, Redbubble, RetailMeNot. The list goes on. So the founding of Blackbird was around this paradox of no capital but successful startups. And so the key challenge or the key question all of our own investors asked us is, like, you know, is this a set of random results? Are those companies just outliers and not a trend, or is there something that will change in the future? And also, I think Rick and I were largely unsuccessful before Blackbird. We had no track record to speak of. I would say limited business success in our prior careers. So there was nothing remarkable about us as people right at the beginning. And I think it was really only the true believers in technology companies and true believers in the Australian ecosystem to produce these global champion companies that took a chance on us and on this moment in time of the Australian technology industry. It took us more than 500 meetings, 22 months. We got 97 people to say yes to $29 million. So imagine the world's biggest angel round in a highly skeptical audience of people about a decade ago. There were things going for us. As I said, there were all these successful companies already in Australia and no one really paying attention. That classic startup, here's the problem in the industry and no one is focusing on it, and here's our solution of a community of founders helping the next generation. And so we had enough believers to say yes. And you know, of course, because it was such a imbalance of no capital and great startups, it was the very best time to start a venture capital firm in Australia in 2012.
Yeah, it sounds very reminiscent of where we've been over the last 12 months. But sort of coming back to that point you made around, there was a lot of startups who had become successful in spite of having no capital. And then you were trying to convince people that capital would make that, you know, you're basically trying to change the landscape. You know, you were trying to convince people that you had a solution to a problem that technically in the companies that you're referring to didn't exist. How do you remember having those conversations? You had, you know, to get 29 million out of those 500 conversations, there was a lot of no's. Do you remember what, if you were to class those no's together, what they look like, or what did the negative feedback look like at the time?
Yes, well, negative feedback we loved because it was feedback. We had a very similar journey, I imagine, to a lot of founders listening on this podcast, where the frustrating thing is that people don't say no. They just stop responding or start ghosting you or don't say anything. So there was a lot of that. And, you know, any fundraising process, any non-yes is a no. So I would say, first of all, the majority of no's in inverted commas was silence. I think people challenged whether, you know, was Atlassian a random result? Is this a one-off phenomenon, or, you know, will there be a next generation or not, which sounds silly. I think even in 2012, people worried that valuations were too high on software companies, which sounds familiar today. I think people were rightly skeptical that the best Australian VC was actually Accel. Accel had invested in five companies in the sort of prior decade and picked the best of the crop, and would there even be a role for a local venture capital firm? I think also people weren't so much saying no to Blackbird, but saying no to the bad experiences they had with prior generations of venture capital managers in Australia. And not only did those people largely fail, but they just weren't very nice people alongside it. And so, again, there was just as soon as they heard Australian venture capital, they didn't want to hear any more feeling to it all.
Yeah. And on the people element, you and Rick had crossed paths prior to Blackbird, but you weren't mates as far as I know. How did you navigate that sort of couple of years prior to closing the first round together? Like which bits of that was hard?
Yeah, in the beginning, Rick was Richard and I was Nikki with two Ks. Rick, there's a famous misspelling of my name in the beginning from Rick. So it was a very unlikely partnership, and has been, you know, one of the most delightful partnerships and delightful relationships I've had the fortune to be a part of in my whole life, you know, business or otherwise. And so incredibly lucky to meet Rick, and incredibly lucky to have had the wonderful relationship that we've built over the last decade. But in the beginning, it was very unlikely. We had met, so before Blackbird, I had founded Startmate. And in the first cohort of Startmate was a company called Grabble. And that was Stuart Argue and Anthony Markar. And after the first year cohort of Startmate, they had moved across to the Bay Area. They were working out of 500's office in Mountain View. At the time, Rick was managing MLC, which is a superannuation fund, a private equity portfolio. So Rick was an LP of all of the great Silicon Valley venture firms like Benchmark and Sequoia and Andreessen and so on. And he had been attracted to what was then called the super angel space of seed managers, and was, I think, actually evaluating 500. He'd come to their office. They said, "Oh, you're Australian. There's another Australian in the office. Meet Stuart and Anthony." And Stuart said, "Oh, you should meet Nikki when you're back in Sydney." And that was the genesis of our relationship. And back then, also, it was very remarkable to be even interested in technology startups built from Australia. And I think very clear from the beginning was this complete philosophical alignment between Rick and I of trying to create these global champion companies from Australia. And I think that that shared values, that shared philosophy has really been the bedrock of the relationship. And I think also we complement each other quite well in a yin and a yang type of way. And again, it's been, you know, one of the best relationships of my life so far.
That's awesome. As you guys were getting to know each other and going through that process of, you know, getting those silences or those not yeses, how many times, was there times along there where you're like, this is too hard? Was there any ever too hard moments in Blackbird?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, we weren't taking a salary for the first couple of years. We weren't, again, independently wealthy before Blackbird. But surprisingly, there wasn't that feeling of any doubt or any hardship. Or it was always just a belief that if we have enough conversations, we will get there. And we will get there no matter what. I think we were just so passionate about the opportunity, and perhaps that's what came across to the people who said yes, was this sense of it needs to be done and we're going to do it. And I think also that tough fundraise, that more than 500 meetings you know, in Australia, in the US, bonded us and brought us together and was the ultimate, I think, starting place for a great relationship, is that hardship of all of those no's and all of the non-yeses brought us together. There's, you know, still have great stories of characters we met and places we went. And so I think it was actually enjoyable in a strange way, even though we were not showing, success in the beginning.
Yeah, I've been to some LP days of Blackbird because I am an LP myself, and that fund won. Bunch of people is an eclectic bunch of folks. Like there is, you can't even cluster people together very well. There's some outlying folks you wouldn't expect to be in VC there. Moving on a little bit, just want to stay on Blackbird a little bit more before we move on to founders in your life rather than Blackbird itself. It was you and Rick, and then Sam for a little while, and then Nick, and now the team's freaking enormous. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what became hard when there was just a small number of you.
I would say it's also a function of the market we are going after. It was possible to manually meet every founder in Australia in the beginning with a very small amount of people. The ecosystem was simply not anywhere as big as it is today. So a small amount of people was easily set up to take advantage of the opportunity ahead of us. I think now the ecosystems of Australia and New Zealand have risen to such a successful level that it's no longer possible manually to take this manual approach to the industry. And so we've built the team at Blackbird with this mindset to make a systematic impact. That means that you need to meet and offer a transformative experience to thousands of founders per year. You need to help tens of thousands of people find their career in startups in the startup ecosystem. And so I think as we've taken that product mindset to approach, we've built things like the StartMate Fellowship, which helped hundreds of people this year, will help more than 1,000 people find a job at a startup in Australia and New Zealand. As we create products and programs through StartMate, through Giants, through all these other experiences, again, to build in this community first approach. I think Blackbird has never pretended to be the expert on anything, but actually that means it's a lot more scalable because the experts are within the community. They're within the founders who are at the same stage or maybe one step ahead of the founders encountering that problem. And I think, you know, our view is to coordinate and to nurture that network and that community. And that's how you help thousands of people per year in a meaningful way. So I think in the beginning, just a function of how small the industry was, possible to do it manually. I think now it's not possible to do it manually. And in a decade's time, it 100% will not be possible to do manually. And the interest of Blackbird is to make a systematic or a system-wide impact. And hence we built the team, and I think we will have hundreds of people in the coming years to fully take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think, can we also acknowledge it's a function of the success of Blackbird? You know, you were effectively, you know, small funds. It's hard to build big teams on management fees alone on small funds, right? Like you need some returns. You need some investment into your business, as in being the management company of your business, for you to be able to go, hey, you know what, we need 100 people. You know, any company to go, you know what, we need 100 people. You need revenue, or you need support, or you need both. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And so the business model of venture capital or any kind of private equity funds management is the LPs will pay you a management fee. This is what pays the salaries of the team. In the beginning, if you have a small fund, you have a small management fee. If you have multiple funds that sort of stack these revenue contracts on top of each other, you obviously have a lot more revenue. And the favorable aspect to management fees and private equity is that the investors are committing for 10 years. So you have that extreme certainty of revenue prediction to pay the team. And then the big incentive is carry. So you get paid 20% profit sharing, but that is a decade on the horizon and illiquid and only results when all the money flows back to the investors. So the teams within venture capital firms are built, determined by that management fee. The management fee is determined by the number of funds and the size of funds that you raise.
Yeah. And those returns that come back into the partnership, Are they Blackbird's, or are they Nikki and Rick's returns, which you then plow back into the business because you're the founders and you want to grow it?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, maybe towards we've always viewed Blackbird as a startup. We've built Blackbird with all of the heart and soul and the love and care of a startup. But also we every person within Blackbird has ownership of the management company. Every person inside of Blackbird has carry in all of the funds that they're a part of. And so, again, that equity mindset for the employees, that's always been a guiding principle in setting up Blackbird. And so, you know, we've built the team on the success of the funds. And certainly, you know, we want to reinvest for the future, certainly want to also even, I would say, not sell too early. I think, you know, to be successful, you need to invest in successful companies. But then there's this second part where you need to not sell those successful companies too early. And I think actually in the past, Australian venture capital firms have sold too early. They've chosen the right companies. They've been part of the right journeys, but they've actually prevented the ultimate success because they sold too early.
Yeah, awesome. I'd like to change gears now. And instead of talking about Blackbird, I'd like to talk to you around Hard Mode with the lens of the founders that you guys work with. How many portfolio companies are there across all the funds now? Or how many have you invested in total? Is maybe that's the right question.
Well, we have invested in 88 companies through Blackbird and a couple hundred more through Startmate.
Right. And of those 88 in Blackbird, how many of those are no longer with us?
I would say likely 10 to 20% have unfortunately not succeeded, will have failed and are out of business.
Yep. No, that's cool. I mean, but that's how this works, right? Like this is like when you're taking early, when you're backing people early, not everything's going to win. And there's the old statement in VC that if all your companies are winning, you're not taking enough risks, right? If your company is surviving.
Absolutely. And even maybe a better measure of that is in our first fund, this is the oldest fund that we raised about a decade ago. We invested in 20 companies and then 12 are still active. So 40% of that first fund has either sold or failed or some combination of the above.
Awesome. Well, let's without sort of necessarily, you know, drilling into individual folks, can you talk to us about, you know, some of the times when you had conversations with those founders who aren't with us? You know, we all know we've got the Mels and Cliffs and the Didiers and the Lukes of the world who are obviously, you know, running very large successful companies right now. But as you said, there's 40% of them who are no longer with us. Can you just sort of talk us through some of the thought process or some of the situations that were really kind of hard, you know, as you were helping those founders transition from what was their dreams to maybe not?
Well, I'd also answer the question in a couple of ways. Obviously, the companies that are no longer with us, but I'll also talk about the hard mode of the companies that have succeeded, because there's you know, equal amounts of hard mode, if not 10 times as much hard mode in those success stories. Because I think that all problems ultimately are people problems. And whether that is in the case of a company that didn't work out, founder relationships. I think when a company fails, which is completely fine. Again, you know, we want to be making sure that we're failing enough times, which means that we're taking enough risk and enough pushing the boundaries of new frontiers, that we are failing a healthy amount, which is, you know, 40-50% of the time. But obviously, for the person founding that company and their whole life is in the dreams of that company, they feel very obligated and to the team members that are working at that company, and it hasn't worked out, and there's a high amount of stress and anxiety once you realize that it's not going to work out. And I think the job of an investor should be to remove stress in those very challenging moments, and whether that is rounding up to the founder in whatever financial terms or legal contracts or in those situations, whether that is helping the team explore new opportunities once the company is destined not to work out, either within the portfolio or outside of the portfolio, making sure that the founder is okay personally and mentally, and they are set up for you know, not to crash into a brick wall in terms of new work arrangements or what have you. And I think the job of a great investor is to remove stress in those times rather than add stress. And I think reputation, we say reputation is built in drips and lost in buckets. And the bucket losing moments do tend to be in those situations. And there's plenty of war stories around investors with nice websites and nice founder friendly claims that unfortunately in those situations haven't lived up to the words on their website. And so I think Blackbird has always taken an approach to those situations. Our job is to remove stress and again take into account all of the situations of the people involved, to know that, you know, their life has been invested in that company. And even though our capital has been invested, we obviously have the benefit of a portfolio of investments that founder and that those team members do not. So I think, you know, those are very tough. But I you know, when I think hard mode, and I think the most sort of gut-wrenching, emotionally tough moments, I think when a company is scaling so fast, when you're hiring so many people so quickly, and organizational structures and processes that work at 20 people don't work at 50 people, don't work at 150, you're constantly reinventing the way that a company is structured and processes and how things get done within a company. There's always people problems in that rapid scaling. And so I think particularly on the, and then combined with often founders are doing this for the first time. They're not qualified to be a CEO, and the journey of going from a founder to a great CEO, I think that is like a gut-wrenching journey. And I would say if there's something that Blackbird concentrates on helping with, it's that journey from a founder to a great CEO, and helping that happen as smoothly as possible. But it is a very chaotic journey, and a very unlikely journey. If you think someone who hasn't even hired someone before or managed someone before all of a sudden is atop a couple hundred person organization within a few years, that's the hard mode. That's when you say hard mode, I think, wow, that journey is incredibly hard.
Yeah. You alluded to it before, and we spoke with a very good common friend of ours, Rowan Simpson, in the podcast earlier this month. You know, he spoke about some of the real touch and go moments of some of the what are success stories, Zero, Vend, Timely, you know, in his company. You know, when you think about your successful portfolio companies and you talk about, you know, them going through hard bits, is there anything that springs to mind, that a story you could tell us around, you know, the bit where it was super hard before it got better?
I probably have a slightly different take on this, and Rowan has lived all of those experiences viscerally. His blog post on all three or three or four stories were fantastic. There was a comment that Scott from Atlassian told me very early on that stuck with me, which is success slaps you in the face. And oftentimes the most successful companies succeeded right from the beginning in at least the portfolio of Blackbird. And there is this sense of like a hero's journey, in every story of a hero's journey, you need an adversary or a villain. You need a sort of tough starting moment. You need these sort of elements to the hero's journey. From a right time, right product standpoint, often the great successes of at least the stories we've been a part of have actually happened from the beginning. There's been ugly moments with people growth and organizational and growing into a leader and building a great company and building a great culture that are just incredible feats of business. But I actually am going to say I don't have any sort of near-death moments that triumphantly rose from the ashes.
Fair enough. And that's cool. I think that, you know, the stories of some of your, especially Fund One founders, have spoken about, again, like you mentioned, unlikely founders. These are people solving problems that they don't feel qualified to do. And I think most founders probably feel like they're not qualified to do what they're doing. I feel like I'm not qualified to do what I'm doing, as much as we talk about it. And, you know, you mentioned it yourself as well back in the beginning. I'd like to just go off a little bit to the side here a little bit and just talk about the hardness of sort of getting going nowadays. You know, you and I obviously run, you know, we play in the same ecosystem and look at the way to capitalize businesses from slightly different angles. Although I'd like you to share, when I sat down with you and spoke to you about what I wanted to do at Tractor, you said, hey, we actually did that for a while. And then sent me over all your spreadsheets. Can you tell us a little bit about why, what's hard for founders when it comes to thinking about the way they capitalize their business?
I think, I think venture capital is such a limited product for a limited set of businesses and limited set of outcomes. And so naturally, being so limited, that there is opportunity for many different types of financing and structures, such that it serves the whole market and it serves even a bigger part of the market. So I think in terms of in the early days where you don't know, there's the highest chance of don't know. It's probably tough to choose. And I think, you know, what you've done really well is to have the flexibility of the options, and whatever path is taken, the capital from Tractor is compatible with any of those paths. And then I think from once a business is of a certain scale and of a certain they know the market opportunity in a lot more detail, then it's a lot clearer how to compare different financing options, whether that is venture capital, whether it is revenue-based financing, whether it is venture debt, whether it is straight up vanilla debt. I think you're sort of best placed once you've figured out the market, figured out the product, figured out the customers, figured out the opportunity. But at the beginning, I would say it's pretty difficult because there's a lot of unknowns. I if you take venture capital in the beginning and it doesn't turn out to be that sort of outlier, grow to $100 million a year in revenue in 7 years type opportunity, that's fine. There's no obligation from the founder to the investor to say that that is going to be the case. Any intelligent investor will know that it doesn't work out more times than it does work out. And, you know, if plan A is that big swing and 9 times out of 10 doesn't work out, you know, again, like no one is disappointed, or no one should be disappointed if that turns out to be the case.
Yeah, I think, I think hard mode for founders, as you said early on, is trying to figure out which of these things is compatible with them where they are now and where they want to be. And, you know, I say to founders all the time, I think, you know, I'm certainly not anti-venture. You know, I'm an LP in your funds. I'm an LP in lots of things. I think it's the right thing for the right people. But making decisions is hard, right? Like, and nobody wants to make a decision that they can't, you know, that creates a path they can't come back from. It's great hearing you say that, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out. We all know that. I've really enjoyed this chat, and I think it's hopefully it's been helpful to people to understand that, you know, starting venture companies is different. Is there any advice that you have for people wanting to start a VC company now? What do you imagine hard mode might be in 2022, as a potential first-time GP of a venture fund?
Well, I would say the skepticism when we were starting was, why the hell are you doing this at all? So it wasn't so much, it was like people just didn't believe in the opportunity. I think now, a decade on, if I had to guess, the challenge would be, why are you unique? Why do you have a fresh set of beliefs that is different from all of the other VC funds or investment firms or investment offerings? And so I think it's that uniqueness and defining something, you know, that you believe in that other people don't believe in, or, you know, what audience of people are underestimated from a funding point of view that you have unique insights and access to. I think it's defining the 10x different rather than, you know, why are you doing this at all, which we had a lot of a decade ago.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few new fund managers and you know, a few people who were starting, for argument's sake, vanilla venture companies. And, you know, when I put my LP hat on, it's the question is, you know, do I give it to Nikki or do I give it to you? You know, what have you got? You know, these guys have got track record and a lot of results, you know, and returning things for me. It is it feels like they're starting from, the competition is strong. You know, the marketplace is crowded right now. So it's a really interesting thought process around, if you're going to start a venture fund, why? I've had that conversation several times lately. We might wrap things up and just finish with my favorite question for you, Nikki. What's next for you personally, and what's next for Blackbird?
Yes, I would say, so obviously we're one decade on, I think the ambition of Blackbird is to create this community, this set of programs and products such that we have this ecosystem level impact in Australia and New Zealand. This sort of helps Australia and New Zealand rise up the rankings, win lots more gold medals in these creation of global champion companies. I think in the first decade, it was possible, and I think Blackbird has gone close to nearly capturing the majority of all startup returns from startups in Australia. In doing that in the next decade, I think it's going to require us to again have this product mindset and to grow all of these programs like the StartMate Fellowship and Giants and StartMate Overall and all of the things that we're doing at Blackbird in terms of helping companies build their teams at scale to help them hire thousands, if not tens of thousands, people per year. And so I think it's building Blackbird into that that Rome of the startup ecosystem where all roads hopefully lead through a Blackbird or StartMate program or product. I think personally, it is in building that does involve hundreds of employees and I think creating a great culture and a great environment within Blackbird that attracts the best people to work at Blackbird and to get those people to do the best work of their lives. I think the joy of the job in the beginning was seeing founders succeed and go from nobody to somebody, and the joy of the job in the last couple of years have been seeing employees of Blackbird and StartMate go from nobody to somebody. So I think personally focusing on creating that environment such that those people that do work for Blackbird and StartMate can achieve that system level impact.
Awesome. Well, that's exciting. I think it's an exciting time for founders to be looking for partners to help them grow their businesses, you know, which and the capital comes along with them. You know, congratulations on building what you've built. I've been, you know, part of the Blackbird and part of the StartMate community for a long time now. And I think you are heading towards that massive impact. And just thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me, and congratulations to you too, and all that you've created at Traktor in the first couple of years, and future congratulations on the huge impact you'll make in the decades to come.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
That was Hard Mode with Blackbird co-founder Nikki Shivak. You can find Blackbird online at blackbird.vc, and you can find Nikki on Twitter at Nikki Shivak. Thanks a lot for listening. Cheers.